Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm joined on the podcast today by Valerie Valdez, author of the new science fiction novel, Where Peace is Lost. Library Journal wrote about an earlier novel by Valdez. Featuring memorable Cuban-descended characters, this engaging space opera debut delivers a story that dances between hilarity and seriousness, with all the joy and frustration psychic cats can bring to the mix. Valerie, welcome to the podcast.
And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your new novel, Where Peace is Lost, how would you describe the novel?
So the quick elevator pitch, it's about a refugee, Kel. She's a former knight. She's hiding out from the empire that conquered her people and has to come out of hiding to go on a road trip to save the new planet that she lives on from a deadly war machine that could destroy it.
And is this a standalone or is this the beginning of a new series for you?
So as of right now, it's a standalone. I am working on sequel stuff for it, outlines and pitches and things like that, but have not sold anything yet. I live in hope, but I tend to write my novels so that they are what they say, standalone with series potential. So if you pick up the book and that's the only one you pick up, it'll still be fine. It ends, you know, in a satisfying way, I think. But we shall see what unfolds.
That's great. Well, do you remember the original idea or impetus for Where Peace is Lost?
Yeah, I mean, my ideas tend to come from a lot of places. I'm a very magpie writer in that sense. I get inspiration from all over. This one, I would say the very first thing I think that started me on the road to this was thinking about the character of Obi-Wan Kenobi from the original Star Wars film and how you have this mysterious figure hiding out on this planet and ostensibly has this deep backstory that we know very little about. And he is called out of hiding to help this young farm boy basically cross the galaxy and save the world, you know, the galaxy, the universe. And I thought a lot about, just as a character, what that story would look like if he were the main character instead of Luke Skywalker. And, you know, has to, again, same deal, come out of hiding, save the planet, save the world. But is risking exposure, is risking his old enemies coming after him and causing not just problems for him personally, but for everyone around him in a sort of scorched earth way. And I sort of spun it out from there in various directions. And the first thing I did was, of course, gender swap Obi-Wan, because I like to write lady protagonists as a rule.
Sure. Well, what was your original writing journey that led you to writing your first stories and your first novel and getting them published?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, I started writing when I was a kid. I'm one of those, mm-hmm. right, where I've been writing my whole life off and on. And the journey for this, I started doing National Novel Writing Month in, I want to say, 2005. And so every year, every November, I would sit down and start a whole new novel. And a lot of times I won pretty much every year. So I would end up usually with about half of a novel and then just never finish it, because it, to me at the time, it was more about the challenge of doing the thing and the fun of it. And it wasn't until Chilling Effect that I really thought to myself, you know, I think I can make a go of this. I think I can finish this and edit this and try to make something of it. And what helped me then after that was, I had a friend who had gone to Viable Paradise, the workshop, and recommended that I try to, you know, get into that as well. And I did. And the encouragement and cohort that I built there has definitely helped me, encouraged me, supported me all through this journey. And here we are.
And can you tell us a little bit, what was your experience like at the Viable Paradise writing workshop?
Oh, goodness. I mean, it was basically a week of, you know, lectures and camaraderie and critiques and just kind of building up confidence, I think, was probably the most important aspect of it for me. I am a very self-conscious writer. I am very self-effacing. And it is difficult to learn the skill of not just accepting criticism, but accepting compliments gracefully. And so some of that was very useful in there. But also, again, just building community, meeting other people who were doing the same thing that I'm doing, who were also ambitious, interested in getting published and working hard on their craft. And it's not that I didn't know people like that before. Obviously, I had friends who had encouraged me to go to Bible Paradise who are also along this path. But it was sort of my first experience being in a very professionally oriented environment, a very, you know, pro-focused, pushing us all to accomplish our goals and to set those goals, I guess, in more lofty ways, you know, as opposed to just hoping for exposure. It was about, no, be a professional about this, and here's how.
You talked about National Novel Writing Month, mm-hmm. and you started that, I think, around 2005. What do you think was different about the novel Chilling Effect that you wrote that ended up becoming your debut novel?
I think I just loved it, honestly. The other novels that I wrote, I did like them, and they were a challenge, and no writing is ever wasted. Definitely throughout the process of building up my skills and development, I was not, it's not that I was aiming low, I guess, right? I was trying mm-hmm. I was trying to write well, I was trying to do better and consciously improve my skills and my craft. But with Chilling Effect, it was the most me thing, I think, that I had written up to that point. It was me throwing all of my interests, all of my quirks, all of my humor and weirdness and culture into a story that I loved with my whole heart. Instead of it being sort of an intellectual challenge, it was very much me being emotionally invested in the product in ways that was a little different from prior experiences. So,
well, what was your writing process like for your latest novel, Where Peace Is Lost? Are you someone who outlines extensively before writing, or do you just kind of dive into the narrative and see where it takes you?
No, I am an extensive plotter. And so typically what happens with me is I have a sort of parallel process, I guess. And a few different things happen simultaneously. But a lot of times what I write first is the pitch. I will almost always have a notes file where I just kind of, like I said, magpie various information and ideas and things about story, character, plot, theme, vibes, whatever. And it all just goes into a scratch, you know, file. But then I sit down and I write a pitch, you know, back of the book blurb kind of thing. And once I have that, I tend to then keep thinking, keep expanding my notes. Usually I end up with a story Bible either before or after the synopsis. It's often simultaneous that I'm working on all these things at once. But I go from pitch to synopsis to chapter outline with my story Bible developing concurrently. And by the time that I start writing, I usually have not just that full chapter outline, but also the story Bible with character information, world information, links to interesting articles that I may want to reference again, quotes that I think are thematically or aesthetically appropriate that I might want to refer back to. So I maintain a lot of notes before I get started, and then I keep them going after I get started. So even as I'm writing, sometimes I'll have revision notes where it'll be like, oh, I need to go back and establish this, or I need to make this change at some point because I actually like this new idea better. I'm definitely a plotter.
What is it about science fiction that appeals to you as a writer?
Oh, a lot. I think that science fiction is, and fantasy as well, I mean, but it does, any speculative fiction allows us to sort of imagine beyond the scope of our current reality in ways that I think is really fruitful. And sometimes the imagining is as, you know, simple as, what if we had this cool gadget, you know? But I think sometimes the imagining is just also, what if society was different? What if the world was different? What if the sky was purple? It can run the gamut from just very kind of simplistic, basic aesthetic changes to vast societal changes and implications and spinning out theories about how things could be different. And that definitely attracts me. I certainly, one can use that same impetus to make changes to our world, which I think is really good and useful. But I think sometimes that speculative fiction helps us imagine those changes and sort of sort through the ramifications of them in different ways, rather than simply leaping in feet first and hoping for the best.
Well, With some exceptions, the majority of science fiction writers for many years were white men. Do you feel that we're reaching a point now where more diverse voices and diverse writers with diverse experiences are coming to the fore?
I think it's interesting you bring that up right now, because I was actually watching a conversation develop on Blue Sky this morning, which I think is really useful. And I came to it by way of C.L. Polk, who is an amazing fantasy writer, among other things. And they came to it through Juliet McKenna, I believe. And the discussion was essentially about how you may see a lot of very prominent debuts from marginalized people coming out today. And they get a lot of attention. They get a lot of fanfare. But if you start looking into the backlist and you start looking into who has a sustainable career, you know, who has published more than 10 books, which is according to the arguments that's about how many books you need to have in your backlist to be considered a career writer. And you'll find that those debuts do not make it to that point. And so we can definitely make the argument that, oh yeah, we're seeing a lot more people, marginalized people, who are having books published. But even so, I believe the statistics, if you start looking up how many are published these days, it still bears out the fact that the genre is not, it's better, but it is not equitable. And moreover, the people who are getting all that attention getting published are not necessarily developing sustainable careers. And I think that will be the greater measure in future of whether things are improving, is whether those people are able to stick around and keep making stories.
Sure. Well, what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels?
Oh, goodness. I mean, there's so much writing advice out there. I would say that one of the things to keep in mind is, as you're constantly looking for writing advice, just consider it all to be sort of tools that you're putting in your toolbox. You know, there is a thing that we joke about the perfect journal, and that if we could just find the perfect journal, then we would be able to write the perfect story in the perfect journal. And so there's this never-ending quest for the perfect journal. But then what often happens is you end up with a lot of blank journals on your shelf, and you never actually get anything done. And so I think that looking for more writing advice that will solve the problem of you and your own process, your own method, it's not that it's not useful, because you may in fact hit upon the perfect journal at some point. But I think it's more useful to just take all of that writing advice, consider it to be tools in the toolbox, and try those tools out. Use them for yourself. See if they work. If they don't work, then put them back in the toolbox and try something else. But keep honing your own method. Keep honing your own process, and be flexible. If something is working, go with it. If it stops working, then switch it up and find something else that's going to work for you. And I think the other thing I usually would say is to embrace whatever it is that you love writing about. Writing, especially if you're going to make a career out of it, or if that's your goal, writing is not like the highest paying job that you can get out there. If your goal is to get rich quick, then, be a stockbroker or something. But like, if you want to be a writer, then embrace the stuff that you want to write. Embrace what you enjoy. Embrace what you find fun, appealing, enticing, interesting, intellectually stimulating, whatever it is that motivates you, you know, lean into that. Don't try to force yourself into a place that is not pleasant for you. If you want to do a job that you don't enjoy, then writing's not it, I guess. Find something more lucrative to kill yourself over.
That's good advice. Well, are you working on another novel now?
I've got a bunch of things that are spinning up. I usually have multiple projects on the burners, even if I'm not actively working on all of them simultaneously. My brain is usually in different stages of thinking about them. Right now, my main focus is trying to get the outline synopsis, first chapters for the sequels to this book in the hopes of selling them. But I also have some, hopefully coming soonish, some contemporary romanticy stuff that I am excited to share with people.
That's fun. Well, what novels have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Oh, goodness. My reading has totally gone off the deep end. And so most of my free time right now, and I say free in quotation marks, I spend streaming video games at night. That is my mandatory fun. And so in terms of reading, I don't...
Streaming them, meaning that you're streaming them as you're playing them, or you're
yes.
watching someone?
Yes. No, I stream them on Twitch. Yeah. So I play the game and I stream them for other people. And that is the way that I simultaneously decompress and then also get to kind of, you know, connect with other people and hang out with my friends and have a good time. But in terms of my TBR pile, gosh, I have so many things on it right now. My brain is not working on this question, unfortunately. It is a long list of things. What have I read recently? I think the last couple of things that I've read, Ilona Andrews keeps coming out with more Kate Daniels stuff. And so I often will try to pick that up. And the last October Day book is not that recent, but I definitely did reach for that one as well. And oh gosh, there was a great book that I recently blurbed and now I'm spacing on the name, but it was an amazing debut. No, but it was a really, really great debut about what if aliens, basically what if aliens came to Earth, stuck around for a few days and then simply left. And then what would society do as a result of that? How would everything change? How would everyone change? And just sort of the disruptions to people's lives that occurred in the aftermath of that, like the before, during, and after. And it was an amazing novel. And I just cannot remember the name of it. Oh, no. I'm like frantically trying to find it because
that's fine. That's fine. You can actually record on your phone when you find it. Just record like a quick audio file of their name in the title and I'll drop it into the final episode.
Yeah. Oh, it's I'm sorry. I found it. It was Emily Jane and where's the novel? Dang it. Okay. But it was Emily James' debut novel and it was really, really good.
Wonderful. Well, I was going to ask you as well. I mean, since you mentioned it, so what are your favorite games now that you're streaming and playing?
Oh, okay, so the games that I'm streaming right now, I'm streaming Hades, which is an amazing roguelike, and it leaned into the form in a way that I think is extremely cool. It turned dying into simply kind of like part of the plot, I would say, in a way that not all roguelikes manage to do, right? You have these very punishing games where over and over again, you essentially go through the same kind of engineered dungeons and you're trying to get to the final thing. But Hades, the plot of Hades is so deep. The characters are so fun. The art's amazing. The music is fantastic. And so that is a game that dying doesn't feel so bad. It's not like Mario, right? Where you just get frustrated. You have to start over again. You're really annoyed. And I'm also playing Control, which is a science fiction game that is, I don't know if you've heard of the SCP Foundation, but it is basically a fake foundation that evolved in sort of the form of a wiki where you have all of these objects of power that have these abilities, and there's a foundation dedicated to collecting them and containing them. I believe the motto is serve, contain, and protect. But Control is basically that, but a video game. And so you are a character who has rolled into the offices of this governmental group whose entire purpose is to find these mysterious objects of power, contain them in order that like extra planar entities do not harm human beings. And so it is a really cool game. I'm enjoying it a lot. It is very like sci-fi horror kind of thing. And I've also reached a point where surviving is much harder than it was before. Even though I have like telekinesis and can throw parts of buildings at people, it's still tough. And then the other game I'm playing is Breath of the Wild, which is, the last, not the latest, but the prior edition of Legend of Zelda, which is an open world Legend of Zelda, and it's just a delight. Sometimes I just climb a mountain and look at the sunset in that game, and it's beautiful, and it's peaceful. And then I, go fight some monsters.
Where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you and your books and your writing?
Well, they can definitely find me at ValerieValdez.com. That's the easiest place. And all my links, more or less, to other stuff are there. I'm hanging out more on Blue Sky these days in terms of social media, and I'm also Valerie Valdez there. So, and then if you feel like engaging on Twitch with me, then I stream as The Kids Are Asleep, which is ostensibly when I am streaming. However, my kids are getting older, and so their bedtime is creeping backward.
Well, again, we've been speaking to Valerie Valdez, author of the new science fiction novel, Where Peace is Lost. The book is available now, so go buy a copy. And Valerie, thanks for doing this interview.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.